Ever notice how some days you're laser focused, while others your mind feels like a scattered jigsaw puzzle? It's like one minute you're on task, the next you're completely sidetracked.
It's true, isn't it? And it's so frustrating when you can't seem to, wrangle your attention back. It makes you wonder what's really going on up there.
Exactly. Well, a lot of that comes down to a fascinating neurotransmitter called norepinephrine. It's a key player in our brain's ability to focus, and today we're diving deep into its world.
Norepinephrine? I've heard adrenaline, but is it similar?
Sort of. Think of norepinephrine as adrenaline's close cousin. It's involved in that fight or flight response, but it also has a major impact on our day-to-day focus and attention. It's like the brain's alertness system, keeping us on our toes.
Oh, so that's why it's so crucial for focus. So what happens when this system get out of whack?
That's a great question, and it's a big part of what we'll be exploring today. Imbalances in norepinephrine can contribute to a range of conditions, from ADHD to depression. And you know what's really interesting?
What's that?
It's not just about levels of norepinephrine, it's also about how it's synthesized, released, and reabsorbed in the brain. It has a whole intricate dance of brain chemicals.
Wow, it sounds complicated. I'm definitely intrigued to learn more about how it all works.
It is, but we'll break it down. We'll talk about how norepinephrine affects attention and focus, its role in mental health, and even how stress plays a part. We'll also get into some of the medications that interact with norepinephrine systems, like stimulants and beta blockers.
Stimulants like those used for ADHD, so they work by influencing norepinephrine?
They do, along with other neurotransmitters like dopamine. It's a complex interplay, and understanding how these medications work can be really insightful, even for those who don't have ADHD. It sheds light on how our brains regulate focus in general.
I see. It's like getting a peek behind the curtain of our own minds. I'm especially interested in the connection with stress because, let's face it, who isn't stressed these days?
Right? Stress has a huge impact on norepinephrine levels, and we'll talk about how that can affect our focus, our mood, and even our physical health. It's really all connected.
That makes sense. I'm ready to unravel this mystery. Let's get started.
So we've established that norepinephrine is this fascinating neurotransmitter crucial for focus, and that imbalances can lead to issues like ADHD. But what does ADHD actually look like? I mean, how do you even recognize it?
Well, it's a constellation of symptoms, really. Inattention, hyperactivity, impulsivity. These are the hallmarks. But, and this is important, it's not just about having these traits. Everyone gets distracted sometimes, right? It's about the degree to which these things interfere with daily life.
Right, it's like turning up the volume on those everyday experiences. So someone with ADHD might not just be forgetful, they might constantly lose things, miss appointments, or struggle to follow through on even simple tasks.
Exactly. And the hyperactivity can manifest in different ways, too. A child might be physically restless, constantly fidgeting, while an adult might experience more of an internal restlessness, like a racing mind that never slows down.
That's a good distinction. It's not always the stereotypical image of a child bouncing off the walls. It can be much more subtle, especially in adults. And impulsivity. What does that look like in practice?
Impulsivity can show up as interrupting conversations, making rash decisions, or struggling to wait their turn. It's that difficulty with inhibiting responses, thinking before acting.
It's almost like a disconnect between the thought and the action, right? Like the impulse fires before the brain has a chance to process it fully. Now, you mentioned that this has to significantly impact daily life. What areas are typically affected?
Well, academics are often a struggle. It's not that individuals with ADHD aren't intelligent, it's that focusing and organizing their thoughts can be incredibly challenging. Relationships can also be affected due to the impulsivity and difficulty reading social cues.
That makes sense. And how is ADHD actually diagnosed? Is there a specific test?
Unfortunately, there isn't a simple blood test or a brain scan that can diagnose ADHD. It's a clinical diagnosis based on a comprehensive evaluation of symptoms, their duration, and their impact on various aspects of life. Clinicians often use rating scales, gather information from parents, teachers, and the individual themselves, and rule out other potential causes for the symptoms.
So it's a bit of a detective process. It sounds like getting a clear picture requires input from multiple sources and a really thorough understanding of the individual's experiences. Now, I know there are different types or presentations of ADHD. Can you explain those?
Sure. Traditionally, ADHD was categorized into three subtypes: predominantly inattentive, predominantly hyperactive impulsive, and combined type. But more recently, the focus has shifted towards thinking of these as presentations that can change over time. So someone might primarily struggle with inattention as a child, but later in life, the hyperactivity, impulsivity might become more prominent, or vice versa.
So it's not a fixed label, it's more fluid, reflecting how the symptoms manifest at different stages of life. That's interesting. And I've heard the term hyperfocus used in connection with ADHD. What exactly is that?
Hyperfocus is this intense, almost obsessive focus on a particular task or interest. It's not officially recognized as a symptom in the diagnostic manuals, but it's commonly reported by individuals with ADHD. It's like getting completely absorbed in something to the point where everything else fades away. It can be both a blessing and a curse, because while it allows for deep concentration, it can also make it very difficult to disengage and shift attention when needed.
So we were talking about the very real impact of ADHD on daily life, and it's not just about academics or relationships.
Yeah. This study we came across, it really highlighted some pretty stark realities about long-term health.
Yeah, the decreased lifespan findings were unsettling, to say the least. 7 years for men, 9 for women. That's a significant difference. It really underscores the importance of understanding and managing ADHD effectively.
It does. And while the study didn't pinpoint exact causes, the correlations with risky behaviors like smoking and alcohol misuse and other mental health challenges,
It paints a concerning picture.
It makes you wonder, doesn't it? Is it the ADHD itself leading to these behaviors, or are there underlying factors contributing to both? It's like, which came first, the chicken or the egg?
Exactly. It's a complex interplay, and I think that's what makes it so challenging to address. It's not as simple as just treating the ADHD symptoms. It's about looking at the whole person, their environment, their support system.
Right, the holistic approach. And that brings us back to the importance of early diagnosis and intervention. If we can identify and support individuals with ADHD early on, perhaps we can mitigate some of these long-term risks.
Absolutely. Early intervention can make a huge difference. And, you know, another thing that struck me from the materials we read was the sheer number of people affected. Millions globally. Yet there's still so much stigma and misunderstanding surrounding ADHD.
It's true. And the diagnostic process isn't always straightforward either. It relies heavily on clinical evaluation, subjective analysis, and gathering information from multiple sources. There's no simple blood test, unfortunately. It's a detective process.
Yeah, and the fact that symptoms can present differently across the lifespan, and particularly between genders, adds another layer of complexity. It's no wonder it's often overlooked, especially in girls and women.
And then there's the whole overdiagnosis versus underdiagnosis debate. It seems like finding that balance is a real challenge. Some experts are concerned about overdiagnosing, while others argue that ADHD is significantly underdiagnosed in adults. It's a tightrope walk.
I see. It's fascinating how our understanding of ADHD has evolved over time, from minimal brain damage in the 1930s to the more nuanced understanding we have today. And the terminology itself has changed so much. Hyperkinetic reaction of childhood. Attention deficit disorder. It's a testament to how much we're still learning.
Mm-hmm.
And the treatments have evolved as well, from the introduction of Benzedrine in the 1930s to the more targeted medications available now. It's a constant process of refinement and improvement.
Mm.
And of course, non-pharmacological interventions like therapy and lifestyle changes play a crucial role too.
So we've been diving into this really dense research on ADHD, and honestly, it's a bit overwhelming. Everything from diagnosis and symptoms to long-term health risks, it's a lot.
It is, yeah. And the sheer volume of studies, meta-analyses, systematic reviews, it's like trying to drink from a fire hose. But some pretty clear patterns are emerging, wouldn't you say?
Definitely. That study on reduced lifespan, for example, 7 to 9 years, that's kacha, sobering. And the correlation with risky behaviors, like substance misuse, it really makes you think.
It does. Makes you wonder about causality, too. Are these behaviors a direct result of ADHD? Or are there other underlying factors at play? The chicken and egg dilemma, right?
Exactly.
And, you know, the complexities of diagnosis really stood out to me. No single test, reliance on subjective evaluations, the fact that symptoms can shift throughout life.
Mm-hmm.
It's a bit of a detective process, as they say.
Yeah, and the potential for both over- and underdiagnosis adds another wrinkle, especially with adults, it seems. And in women and girls, it's often overlooked altogether, presenting differently than in boys and men.
Right. And then you have the historical context, too. The terminology, the evolving understanding of the disorder from minimal brain damage to the more nuanced view we have now. It's a journey.
It is. And the treatments have come a long way as well, from Benzedrine in the 30s to the more targeted medications and therapies available today. Speaking of treatments, the debate around stimulant medication was particularly interesting, wasn't it?
Oh, absolutely. The effectiveness versus the potential side effects, the long-term impact.
Yeah.
It's a complex equation. And the discussion of non-pharmacological interventions like behavioral therapy and neurofeedback, those are crucial too.
Yeah, absolutely. It really highlights the need for a personalized, holistic approach to treatment, not a one-size-fits-all solution. And the role of family and support systems is essential as well.
Couldn't agree more. The impact on quality of life also really resonated with me. It's not just about managing symptoms. It's about enabling individuals with ADHD to thrive in all aspects of their lives.
Absolutely. So I guess the takeaway here is the reading study of Eluent T is complex, multifaceted, and deeply impactful. And there's still so much to learn. But with continued research and a focus on individualized care, there's hope for better outcomes.